Thank you, Madam Clerk. We will convene this special meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors for April 5th, 2022. As we start, we'll note that we have hearing assist devices at either end of the dais, that the room is T-coil compatible for those of you who use that technology. If you'd like to speak on the one item that we have before us this evening, there are yellow speaker request forms in the wooden box at the back of chambers at the basket there. Please fill them out, leave them in the basket, and the clerk will retrieve them. And if you would now, please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have only one item on the agenda tonight, and it's a hearing to request direction staff on proposed language for a county charter to be submitted to the voters and to provide other direction as appropriate. We will turn it over to Assistant County Counsel John Ansola Beher for the staff report.
Perfect. Thank you, Board. So in December, on December 7th, 2021, the Board directed staff to proceed with a process to have the Board consider the adoption of a county charter to be submitted to the voters at the next general election, which was November 8th. The Board then directed staff to limit the proposed charter to the issue regarding the process in which vacancies in county elected offices are filled. That's both elected offices in the Board of Supervisors and other county elected offices, such as the sheriff and the DA. And then on February 15th of this year, the Board considered various options for filling vacancies and directed staff to draft a charter where vacancies in any elected office, so both supervisors and other elected offices, are filled via election any time the remaining term of the office is 180 days or more. This was at our last meeting. Here's the schedule that we're looking at in terms of submitting this to the voters, potentially. This is how the process would lay out should this Board direct us to submit it to the voters, or direct staff, or approve it to be submitted to the voters, excuse me. So we drafted the current language of the charter. So what I pulled here is the how vacancies are filled in the Board of Supervisors. It's nearly identical with other elected offices, with the exception of the Board has the ability, if the vacancy is 180 days or less, the Board has the ability to appoint someone to fill the other elected offices. So I'll just read the language. So the current language again is, if at any time the vacancy occurs, the remaining term of office is 180 days or greater, then the vacancy shall be filled by a vote of the electors of that district at a special election to be called by the Board of Supervisors not more than 60 days after the vacancy occurs, except that if the vacancy occurs within 180 days of a regular scheduled election held throughout the supervisorial district, the election to fill the vacancy may be consolidated with that regularly scheduled election. The person receiving the highest number of votes in that election shall fill the vacancy. Subsection B says, if at any time the vacancy occurs, the remaining term of office is 180 days or less than 180 days, then the vacancy shall remain vacant until the vacancy is filled through the next regularly scheduled general election. And I do want to know, I think this language might have been the 60 days, I think, is actually 30 days in the charter. So I'll have to look at that, make sure that those are consistent. But the idea there was to have a short time frame for the Board to actually call the election itself so things can get started more quickly. So I think the charter, the draft charter, this exhibit is, I think, 30 days. So one of the potential unintended consequences that we identified through this process is, especially when the term of office, let's say, is 181 days, closer to the 180-day mark, but above 180 days, the time it takes to actually fill the vacancy through the election process will run on the heels of probably either the regular, so either the special election will run right up against the regular election, or if it's consolidated with a regular election, there'll be, you know, two of the same candidates to fill, you know, the same office, but one as a vacancy and one as a permanent office. Or the again, or the special election will run up right on the heels of the regular election. So that was the issue that we wanted to identify with the board, you know, with the current language and the direction, and we wanted to seek further direction from the board on that. So some of the alternatives that we wanted to identify is to increase the buffer to 365 days or greater. So so the language again is identical, but again, it's if the vacancy, if the term of office is 365 days or more, then it would be filled by an election. This would provide an adequate buffer between when the when that election takes place versus when the election takes place to actually fill that office on a permanent basis. Orange County is this way. This is how they, theirs is 365 days or more. And some of the financial considerations. So to submit the charter to the voters is estimated to be $353,000. A consolidated general election to fill a countywide vacancy is estimated to be $313,000. A special election to fill a countywide vacancy is estimated to be $1 million. So that's your other elected offices like the DA and the sheriff. And then a consolidated general election to fill a board of supervisors office is estimated to be $66,000. And then a special election to fill a board of supervisors office for a single district is $354,000. So those are some of the financial considerations we wanted to bring to your attention. And that's really the extent of my presentation, and really just looking for direction from the board.
All right, thank you, Mr. Ansola Behar. Are there any questions of Mr. Ansola Behar? Mr. Beshon.
Thank you very much for that very brief report. This is, I just want to ask this question because I've gotten a lot of questions. We are not becoming a charter county for any other reason but elections. Is that correct?
That is correct. You're only a charter county insofar as the charter includes those provisions. Everything else will be left to the as general law.
As general law.
Exactly.
And there are other counties in California that have done this type of thing. I know Orange County had done something like this.
Yes.
But there's more than just Orange County, right?
Yes.
There are other counties that have done this.
Yes, there's 14 charter counties. So each, some are very comprehensive. San Diego and San Francisco and LA, for example, but others are, you know, anywhere from being very short, two or three pages like Orange County's, to somewhere in the middle. But yeah.
Thank you.
Any other question, Ms. Arnold?
Yep. So John, can we go back to the slide of where you were talking about the either the 180 days or the 365 days? Doesn't matter. My question, that one, if the alternative, okay. So, where we go down to then the vacancy shall be filled by a vote of the electors of that district at a special election to be called by the Board of Supervisors not more than 60 days after the vacancy occurs. So I'm just wondering, not more than 60 days. So a vacancy occurs, we're supposed to be holding an election, or the clerk's office holding an election not more than 60 days after. And is that
No. This is that would be for the Board of Supervisors to actually call the election itself,
okay,
which is the first step in the clerk recorder's registrar's process of starting to get everything geared up for the election itself.
Okay, because that wording's funny. Then the vacancy shall be filled by a vote of the electors. That sounds like an election, right? Of that district at a special election. Oh, so you're saying the word called is where
exactly
the key is. To be called by the board. So the board's just calling for the election not more than 60 days after. And then we talked briefly, but it's a few months process, which is where I was going with 60 days anyway, right? So realistically then, if the Board of Supes have 60 days to call for the election, and then the election process itself takes, what was it, 3 months or something to gear up?
Or clerk recorder probably answer that. My understanding is that each one is unique. Each circuit,
depending on how big.
What's happening,
yeah,
how much staffing is available. Are there other elections where some of the that are taking place at the same time that they can kind of piggyback off of some of that work? So really, it's situational dependent. And I'm told about 6 months is the upper end of that process.
So That is the reason I'm asking questions is for sure it looks like, and I think you took this from Orange County, maybe the 365 days, but we were having the discussion that if it was only 180 days left in the office, pretty soon you've run out of time anyway, and your 180 days seems like it.
Right. In this scenario, most likely someone would be elected for the vacant office, let's say within 180 days of the vacancy itself, and then would probably serve a term of, you know, another 186 months or so.
Okay, thank you.
And I did confirm that the charter that it was included in the staff report says 30 days to be, so it needs to be called within 30 days, not 60 days. This was
old. And that just now we've confirmed, that just means
call.
Start your engines and get it ready.
Exactly. Yeah. So the language in the charter is 30 days. The idea there is to have the board call the election sooner so then the clerk recorder could get started on that election process sooner rather than later.
Any other questions from colleagues? Mr. Ansola-Behar, could you speak? Mr. Pichon clarified that the proposal in front of us right now, per the staff report, is only on the matter of filling vacancies. What other sorts of things can charters cover? What other functions that would otherwise be general law could be taken over upon voter approval of a charter?
There's quite a bit.
And not an exhaustive list, but yeah. Just for the public's edification there.
So sometimes they'll deal with, let's say, contribution limits. They deal with the duties of the officers themselves, which are, you know, the county administrator. I pulled up pretty much everyone's. Sometimes they'll have civil services process or civil services ordinance included in their charter itself.
Things that might be covered by policy or adopted bylaw or
exactly.
Ordinance and could be separately folded into the consideration of the charter.
Right, and sometimes there's finance provisions that are in there. For example, I'm looking at San Mateo's. They have a whole article just on, you know, fiscal provisions and the controller, annual audits, things like that. So it's actually pretty extensive in terms of what a charter could cover. And it's enumerated in the California Constitution. I have that, but if you'd like, I can put it up.
Just for the public's benefit the consideration at this time is narrow. We do have a conversation ongoing. And could you speak a little bit to the timetable moving forward if this is to appear on the ballot in November?
Sure. If you can put up my PowerPoint, that'd be probably the easiest. So this is the recommended schedule that was developed through our clerk recorder's office. So June 21st would be the last day for us to adopt for the board to adopt a resolution or an ordinance placing a measure on the November 8th consolidated general election ballot. And the steps after that to November 8th are kind of outlined there. So we'd have to do primary arguments, potentially impartial analysis. There's, you know, the public examination period. And so that's the recommended schedule.
All right, very good. Thank you. Ms. Ortiz-Lick.
Thank you. What did we get the answer on how long it takes for the clerk recorder to prepare for an election?
If you'd like that, Ms. Kano, would you like to speak to that question?
Please.
Hi, Elena Kano, County Clerk Recorder. At minimum, John was absolutely right. It depends on what kind of an election we're going to be having. So at minimum 6 months, and that would be easier for a district election as opposed to a countywide, keeping in mind a countywide election, we have a lot more polling places, a lot more poll workers, a lot more ballots to print and proof. And so the process for countywide is certainly more extensive than it would be on a district basis, but at minimum, 6 months.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Seeing no other questions, we're going to open it up to public comment. If you would, again, we do have requests to speak, yellow request to speak forms. I'd ask that you fill it out, and you can leave it in the basket at the end of the dais, and we'll get it. We will start with Mr. Don Maruska, followed by Cindy Muir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Don Maruska. Our family has been here in San Luis Obispo County for the last 28 years, and we're proud to be residents of this fine county. Ever since we arrived here and throughout the time that we've been here, we've really focused on how to ensure fairness for everyone in the community, regardless of whether they're Republicans, Democrats, independents, or whatever. And there's a very sizable number of independents, and sometimes in our partisanship, we lose track of giving attention to those people and the fairness for them in all these different engagements. And as I look at your charter here and I look at the things that you're trying to address, appreciate the intention of trying to give power to the people in making decisions and choices. That power is fundamentally dependent upon what's the underlying fairness and integrity of the offices themselves. And that's entirely dependent, really, back on the districting process and how that districting process occurs. It's interesting to me that the Board of Supervisors is looking at this issue of breaking out and adopting certain things in the charter when, on this item, when, as a number of us advocated, including the League of Women Voters and others, that there be an independent redistricting commission provided by the citizens. And you said, oh, no, that's only done by a few counties, and that's not us. Well, it's done by Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, Santa Barbara City. So there's lots of reasons. And as we look at this, and in particular at the provision for this Board of Supervisors to make decisions about filling vacancies on other elected offices, that's the DA, the sheriff, the people who are the clerk, the assessor, the tax collector, you know, those are very important offices to all of us. And there, again, it depends upon, you know, what is the legitimacy of the Board of Supervisors in making those decisions. So I think in order to really achieve your purposes, your stated purposes, it's critical that there be an independent citizens redistricting commission included in your provisions, and that be a robust and indeed independent process, not just people offering up a series of different recommendations and then the existing board, whoever that may be 10 years from now, making the choices. I know that there were discussions about the cost of this, and there might be several hundred thousand dollars to do a robust citizens redistricting commission. I would ask you to compare that with the cost you're looking at in terms of these elections. I'd also ask you to compare that with the cost that you're incurring with regard to the existing litigation that has arisen from the selection of the patent map and the outrage from many in the community about that. As I see four attorneys from representing the council, the county at each instance, I can only imagine that those costs are going to far exceed what it would have taken to have an independent citizens redistricting commission.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Maruska. Ms. Muir, followed by Cindy Marie Absey.
Excuse me. Is the front door locked of the building? Can anybody check on that?
Yes, it is.
Oh, is it supposed to be locked? Because I have people texting me saying they want to get in, so I'm just wondering to somebody. Don's going to get in. Okay, thank you, sir.
Ms. Muir.
Okay, thank you. My name is Cindy Muir. I live in Morro Bay. I understand the original idea behind making a SLO county charter county, a charter county, even a partial charter county, to keep the appointments of future supervisors in case of death or unforeseen reasons by the state. I think it should be kept as a county matter where an election for that position would be initiated in our own county. However, we are treading on dangerous ground if the charter is not written up with appropriate safeguards. It could allow for another group to take over the authority of the elected Board of Supervisors or sheriff. I strongly encourage this matter be thoroughly investigated and any charter be written out and detailed so that unintentional consequences in the future do not happen as a result of becoming a charter county. Why don't we don't want to open the door to corruption or take over of our county by people running things or making deals behind the scenes. I agree with keeping the state out of our county appointments. So any charter must be written with wisdom and every safeguard possible to keep those who would want to take our elected representatives' authority out of the picture or replace it with any oversight committees which could be biased. There is a fine line here, and this must be thought out completely before moving ahead. Please consider this carefully, as there are those who could want to use this charter proposal for their own agenda. We are still a representative government by the people and for the people. Please do not compromise our constitutional rights. This is a two-edged sword. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Muir. Ms. Abse, followed by Bruce Jones.
Cindy Marie Abse, president of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. As a key part of our mission, the League of Women Voters studies governmental policies and takes positions on proposed policies that affect the fair and equitable representation of the public. We've studied the proposed county charter and have these comments. First, in general, we do not support holding a special election to fill a vacancy on the Board of Supervisors or in other county offices. These positions should be filled at a general election whenever possible for two reasons. Special elections are costly, ranging from $350,000 to $1 million, depending upon the office. Also, special elections historically have low voter turnout and do not require that the winner receive a majority of the vote. As a result, a relatively small number of voters would elect a replacement, thereby undermining the promise of representative government. Having said that, we understand that supervisors are directly elected by the people to represent their districts. They make decisions and implement policies in response to the interests and concerns of their constituents. It is important that the will of the voters be served when filling these vacancies. For this reason, we could support a charter that calls for a special election to fill supervisor vacancies if those elections were conducted expeditiously and cost-effectively. However, we do not support a charter that calls for a special election to fill vacancies in countywide elected offices. We believe that the estimated taxpayer expense cannot be justified. Any benefit of a special countywide election to fill a vacancy in these elected offices must be weighed against potential disruptions to the functioning of the office and the expense. These offices are held by persons with specific training and experience who supervise and are supported by staff with experience conducting the work of the office. Appointing a qualified replacement in the department or another member of county staff would ensure that the office continues to function without incurring the cost of an election. Finally, we have two concerns about the draft ordinance. It does not specify when an election will be set, only when it will be called. We suggest that the timeline specify the setting of the special election to give elections officials time to prepare. Also, it fails to address if or how a vacancy is temporarily filled before the special election. It creates a leadership gap by making no provision for appointing an interim department head prior to the special election. This has a potential to adversely affect the operations of the office and the public services provided. We hope you will consider our concerns and objections to the proposed charter ordinance as you finalize the language. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abse. And Mr. Jones, followed by Jeffrey Specht.
My name is Bruce Jones. I believe that the electorate should determine the filling of the Board of Supervisors seats. Right now, under general law, the governor gets to pick that person. I am, however, concerned that adopting a charter will lead to one amendment after another and disrupt the structure of our local government. I prefer that safeguards be put into this document so that it is not too easy to continually make amendments to the document. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Specht, followed by Richard Patton.
Good evening. My name is Jeffrey Specht, lifetime resident of San Luis Obispo. Our elections are incredibly important. We, the people, choose who actually is elected. That's what they're for. We the people do not elect someone to choose who we want to be placed in different positions. I understand that there is a great cost behind special elections, but when you have someone in the positions that are electable, these are important positions, whether it be a county clerk, a board member for the Board of Supervisors, a city council member, or a mayor. These are positions that we don't ask on a governor or a board supervisor to decide who's best to fill those shoes. The people decide who is best to fill these shoes. In that, it is my position that it's that important for us to spend that extra money to have these special elections. And for our charter to actually coincide with our Constitution, which it really, in my opinion, doesn't altogether. Thank you for your time, and do the right thing.
Thank you, Mr. Speck. Mr. Patton, followed by Sarah Sims.
Good evening, Board. It's good to be here. We have learned over the last 2 years that it is the nature and the disposition of almost all elected officials. As soon as they obtain a little bit of authority, they will begin to exercise control and restraint, restrictions, and suppress the very men and women who elected them. Such assumed authority is why we're gathered here this evening. The intent of the organizing a charter county is to enforce state and federal constitutional law. We should also include safeguards to prevent actions and regulations and mandates which violate those laws and the rights of Americans. Thank you for your clarification just now on for my benefit about the extent of the Charter County. The one thing that I would perhaps one of you could address during your general comment, how exactly is a charter modified? What are the rules associated with that? But my final comment is that any public responsibility, which is voting, should not be advocated to a committee of by a chosen few. The public responsibility is the public responsibility, and we need to honor that. We need to do that. We need to vote, and we need to be in charge of our own destiny, not just a few. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. Ms. Sims, followed by Nicole Dorfman.
Hello, my name is Sarah Sims. I reside in the current District 2. I'm here because my main political concerns are protecting the Republic. To me, it means preserving the boundaries and controls that establish the jurisdiction of our political system. That is the premise of which I will be speaking of today. I understand the appeal of the provisions of filling vacancies outlined in the California Constitution for chartered counties. The electorate should be the ones deciding who fills a vacancy. We live in our county, we know it more intimately, and we have more invested in it than the governor of our state does. I also have concerns about becoming a chartered county. I am concerned at the potential long-term consequences of changing our form of government from a general law county to a charter county, as it opens doors for perpetual vulnerability to unlimited amendments. Amendments that could reduce the authority of current and future Board of Supervisors, current and future sheriffs, current and the future autonomy of our county, and undermine the original intent of adopting the charter in the first place. Amendments are not rare. Orange County has had 6 amendments since 2002 when it was put in place. LA has had 85 amendments, additions, or appeals. Fresno has 19 amendments. Santa Clara has had 17. San Mateo has had 16. El Dorado has 7. I'm not going to keep going on that list, but you can tell that it's not that unusual for a chartered county to change over time. Because of that, right now, the Board of Supervisors, you have the opportunity to adopt safeguards that will protect your charter. We can make it less vulnerable to amendments that would reduce the authority of future Board of Supervisors and sheriffs and protect the integrity of the county against detrimental future amendments. The safeguards I ask you to consider are a 4/5 vote by the Board of Supervisors to place an amendment on a charter on the ballot. Second, a supermajority by the electorate to pass an amendment to the charter. Third, a charter review committee which shall not be created. Fourth, the office of charter county manager shall not be created. And 5, clearly and specifically articulate the job description of sheriff as chief law enforcement of our county, as Alameda County did. Their charter says a sheriff is a chief law enforcement officer of the county and shall have all of the powers performed by the duties prescribed by state laws. And under it also, we can say that as San Francisco did, their sheriff's duties are to also transport ballots to and from any location. I oppose the brought up redistricting committee for the same reasons I am asking for safeguards against the creation of a charter review committee, because I even a committee created to serve the Board of Supervisors also functions to interfere with the direct communication and interaction between the electorate and their supervisors. The committees, who are appointed, not elected, inevitably end up having more influence over the supervisors than the citizens do, more influence than the people that voted them into office. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Ms. Dorfman, followed by Margaret Corman.
Hello, good evening. My name is Nicole Dorfman. I live in Morro Bay. I want to echo what a lot of people have been saying. I really appreciate the sentiment to initiate a charter county for the purpose of keeping local control, which I think is vital to a healthy democracy. So I really appreciate the sentiment that the people would elect if there are any vacancies and it would not be filled by the governor. I also share the concerns for the potential for abuse and change of charter counties, and I'm mostly concerned about unelected officials being elevated to the point that they are making decisions above these elected officials, potentially above the sheriff or the district attorney, who are all accountable to the people. If we do not like the folks that are in office, next election, we can work to vote them out. But if it is an appointed person, they are not at all responsive or accountable to the people. And I think we need to avoid, whenever possible, any situation where appointed people have a lot of power in our county. And for me, the situation with COVID, where the unelected public health director and the unelected city manager had a tremendous amount of power over our elected officials. And I sure do not want to go back to that sort of thing. So anything we can do to keep the power with the electeds, to have very strong safeguards in the charter county, I hope that you will consider the things that have been said. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dorfman. Ms. Corman, followed by Linda Seifert.
Hi, I'm Margaret Carman, resident of Morro Bay. And they've all said it for me, Dr. Jones and Sarah and Nicole. Everything they said, I really totally wanted to say, and I'll keep it short. I'm really concerned that all those counties had passed so many amendments and changed what was originally meant as the intention. And I'm really concerned about the sheriff. And now Nicole brought it up about, I never want to live through, I'm a chiropractor, and I don't want somebody that's unelected making my decisions for me about my health. And so if there's anything we can add into the charter, the safeguards, and I say if people aren't coming for special elections, that doesn't mean we can't have them or shouldn't have them. It's the if they don't show up, then the people who show up, we have elected you guys, and I want to make sure that we safeguard all of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Carman. Ms. Seifert, followed by Patricia Gomez.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Linda Seifert, and I come here tonight as a founding director of the San Luis Obispo County Citizens for Good Government, and also as a former member of a Board of Supervisors from another county. The SLO CG, as an organization, has taken a position with regard to an independent redistricting committee, which we would like to see integrated into any charter proposal. One of the things that's clear is that there is some confusion about the difference between a charter county and a general law county and what can be done. But one of the greatest safeguards for long-term free and fair elections would be to have an independent redistricting committee. I'm here to advocate for that and to urge this board to incorporate it into any charter drafts that will change how our elections are conducted and vacancies addressed. The proposed concept for a charter county is being touted as a way to give voice to the people in selecting its representatives, and that is truly only true if an independent redistricting commission is incorporated as a provision in any initiative. Independent redistricting commissions are one of the best and the most workable ways to depoliticize the redistricting process and to create districts that are through a transparent process. And certainly while there is no one methodology for creating that committee, or one size fits all, certain fundamentals are truly critical to its success. So we would take the position that an IRC should be composed of nonpartisan individuals representing multiple constituencies with the authority to adopt boundaries that ensure fair representation and elections through the creation of districts that respect shape, political subdivisions, ethnic patterns, and communities of interest in accordance with the Fair Maps Act of our state. When designed to serve a community, IRC can lend greater public legitimacy to the redistricting process and can minimize unfairness. Our organization maintains that an IRC, not a county charter concept on its own, is the most fundamental way to give control to the citizens to assure free and fair elections, and we urge the Board of Supervisors to incorporate an IRC into any charter that evolves. I appreciate your time and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seifert. Ms. Gomez, followed by Robert Skinner.
Okay, trying to put the microphone close to me this time. Good evening, thank you, Board of Supervisors. I'm Patricia Gomez, and I too am speaking as a founding member of SLOS and the Vice President of SLOS County Citizens for Good Government. I'm not going to repeat what my colleague has said, but I would just like to extend on it, on the comments. IRCs are not a new concept. California has had one for two redistricting cycles, and since the Fair Map Act of 2019 authorized local commissions, about 20 counties have them in place, including Santa Barbara and Monterey County. They exist because they work and they give voice to the citizens to achieve direct local control about how their districts are decided. The beauty of this is that the local IRC in San Luis would not be created in a vacuum. There are excellent resources that your staff could use to think through the structural choices, policy decisions, and other important factors that go into creating an impartial, transparent, and successful redistricting commission. I have one example here. I will provide it to the clerk for your review. Common characteristics in such commissions are that they have the same conflict of interest rules, the same open meeting rules, the same accessibility of document rules as you do as boards, as other elected officials do. Most importantly, they must be impartial, and there are numerous ways to do that, that your staff could analyze, take public input, and determine what is best for our county. It has been said that commissions are too expensive. I would ask, what is too expensive for local citizens to have a voice in who represents them? Your staff puts the estimates for implementing the filling vacancy provisions of the proposed charter to range from $66,500 to $1 million. And this could happen several times in one decade. A commission is a decennial event that the county could take a decade to plan and budget for. and it would not cost $1 million. IRCs are a way to have fairness, equity, and certainty in future redistricting processes. We strongly urge that this county charter, if any, include a provision that directs staff that an independent redistricting commission be established for the 2030 redistricting process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Mr. Skinner, followed by Gwen Pelfrey.
Good evening. My name is Robert Skinner. I live in Atascadero. I am a retired social studies teacher. I spent 26 years in pastoral roles teaching social studies. One of the key things about social studies and teaching government and civics is that we have this concept of separation of power. And I think we all know and understand Congress has its unique powers, the executive branch has its unique powers, as well as the judicial branch. Now, one thing that is often overlooked is we, the people, we have our own powers to check upon you guys in government. And I think we all can respect that. And an independent redistricting council is a component of checks and balances, because as we understand this concept of gerrymandering is probably one of the worst things that occurred during the civil rights movement. I mean, there were other things, but gerrymandering was a key component of that. And while the Supreme Court came around and they struck down gerrymandering as in issues of in regards to race and whatnot, they're really unclear as of this moment as to the political unfairness of gerrymandering according to political parties. And so, you know, to clarify everything, to bring credibility to your government here, to our government, is we definitely need an independent redistricting commission added to this charter. And that's it. And that's all I'm going to say about that, so to speak. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Skinner. Ms. Pelfrey, followed by Lauren Brown.
Good evening, Gwen Pelfrey. My husband and I are longtime property owners in Templeton, and I'm here this evening to tell you that I support the establishment of a charter county for the sole purpose of filling vacancies in elected positions, rather than have that vacancy be filled by an appointment. I support the earlier speaker that had 5 points of very strong language that should be part of a charter document to ensure that the intention you have today is carried out for decades into the future. And our forefathers did do that when they handed us the Republic. I don't support putting the independent redistricting committee into the charter, and I am familiar with redistricting problems, as my husband and I were the individuals that did sue the county over 10 years ago when Templeton was separated in the districting process. But I don't feel that the county should lock itself in under a charter that would mandate that that independent redistricting committee always be in place. Something that happens every 10 years, many things change. So I ask that you protect our county the way our forefathers did by putting very strong language. They put it into our Constitution. You take an oath to protect that Constitution, both federal and state, and that you be sensitive to what's in the charter so that the powers remain with the people and that they remain the ones that get to make those decisions of how things are run within our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pelfrey. Mr. Brown, followed by Susan Devine.
Good evening. My name is Lauren Brown. I live in San Luis Obispo. I'm here tonight to just some brief comments about the possibility of modifying the charter for the county. I want to strongly urge you to, if you're going that way, to incorporate into it the independent redistricting commission concept. We've seen this work for the state. We've seen it work any number of jurisdictions throughout the country. And what it does is protect the citizens from the harm of gerrymandering. And it's in the long-term interest of creating the healthiest democracy. And I simply want to urge you to include that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Susan Devine. Ms. Devine is our last request to speak.
Thank you. Susan Devine, San Luis Obispo. I just want to remind all of us that the governor of California was elected by a large majority of the voters in California. The governor, like many electeds, including your board, makes appointments, many appointments. If voters don't like who you or perhaps the governor appoint, you vote that elected out. That's how our system works. Attempting to remove power from our elected governor and spending thousands and thousands of dollars for a special election or elections isn't the answer. I think spending upwards of $1 million on an election could better be used by you, our county officials, on issues related to the unhoused, mentally unhealthy persons in our community, on our public health system, and issues that relate to our senior population. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Devine. As I said, that was our last request to speak. Seeing no one else coming forward, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. I'd like to start first. We did have some question in comment as regards how amendments to charters are processed. Mr. Ansola Beher, can you speak to what happens both in the election, the rules of procedure for anything that's put before the voters in the institution of the charter, and then any subsequent amendments to it?
Sure. So, John with County Council's office. So, amendments to the charter are done in the exact same process. They could either be done through the process that the board is doing now, or it could be done through an initiative process by the people. But in any event, any amendments require voter approval.
And those approvals, both for institution and amendment, are
simple, the same.
Simple majority?
Simple majority.
And that's state statute.
Exactly.
And in terms of the vote of the Board of Supervisors, if we choose the legislative path of putting this on the ballot for the voters?
The majority vote.
Simple majority. All right. Let me turn it over. Any other questions first from colleagues? If not, we can get to deliberation and deliver direction to staff. Ms. Arnold.
John, can you put that slide up that shows our timeline again on the process of this particular decision we're making today? Thank you. So besides this hearing tonight, which is the special evening hours, correct? What else? This looks like this is what goes on after how it gets to the ballot. But is this the last hearing we would have?
No, there's one more hearing, and that's going to be, I forgot the date. I forgot my cheat sheet up in my office, but we have one more hearing. I think it's before June 21st.
May 17th.
Yeah, May 17th. That sounds correct.
But it's a daytime hearing.
It's a daytime. Correct? It's okay. A daytime hearing, and that's going to be to see if the board wants to, you know, approve of the final charter itself, the language of the final charter, and approve to submit it to the voters. And then there's a couple other steps too. They'll be for, you know, impartial analysis and primary arguments. So there'll be two other steps associated with that, but there'll be one more hearing. That makes sense.
So then could I ask you, today is, are we moving forward by giving direction to then bring a final draft of a charter situation? Or in other words, do we have to vote today specific wording, or can changes still be made on that hearing on May 17th?
You can still make some changes on that final day.
Okay.
Yeah. I would just suggest if there's any, you know, major changes, they're thinking about tonight.
Right. Otherwise, it would have to kind of
run it back through a process. Yeah.
Let me, if I might, follow on that question, because the top date on your list here is June 21st. Could changes to the nature of the charter be made up into and including June 21st?
Yes. I'd look to the clerk recorder in terms of the guess the how firm this deadline is on that date, but I believe that's pretty much the last date.
Ms. Kano, can you speak to the firmness of that deadline?
I would say that that deadline gives you the opportunity to, it can be flexible, only though what gets shortened is the time period to do your arguments and your impartial analysis. That would just be shortened. That time frame would be shortened. But yeah, that could be flexible if you wanted, but then that would impact the deadlines to the arguments and the impartial analysis and or fiscal impact statement.
So might it be useful for this board to agree that this date of the 21st is an appropriate target date, not
it's
that
appropriate.
We're necessary, and we would do that. I would ask, and if in fact we're considering moving this forward, that we agree among ourselves that we're going to make that the last. Let me ask council, and I do know that other questions exist here, in the sense we're adopting a resolution and possibly or in technically an ordinance, is there any issue of introduction that is required before the consideration of June 21st?
No, not that I'm aware of, okay. Because it's going to be submitted to the voters
to the
as
voters.
Opposed to being introduced and then adopted.
So word changes could be made on the 21st to subject to final vote wherever that leads.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that as we consider where we go. Ms. Arnold, do you have further questions?
Lost my track here. I'll wait. I'll let somebody else ask questions.
Mr. Pashon.
Yeah. So I've heard from folks tonight about modifications. So LA County seems to be the king of modifications to their charter. But when you have 11 million people, you know, I'm sure you have 11 million opinions. So it gets kind of tricky. Can you put a 4/5 vote from this board into something like this so that when we heard this from a couple speakers, so that to be able to put modifications and amendments to the charter on the ballot, it would take a 4/5 vote of the supervisors.
So we can research that some more. We didn't, you know, do a deep dive research into that, but we can research that some more. Our initial reaction to that suggestion is no. I know it sounds kind of ironic that by virtue of adopting a charter that you're taking away some of the powers that the state requires or that the state has, but if you look at the constitution that allows counties to adopt charters, it doesn't specify, you know, that, and the process to actually to adopt or amend the charter is outlined in state law, and I don't think that you can, by virtue of adopting a charter, change that, especially, so for example, you couldn't do, say, the people couldn't issue an initiative in order to amend the charter itself. So that would be antagonistic and inconsistent with state law. And I think the same is true by building in a 4/5 requirement too. So okay. It's, yeah.
So then that would also probably, also, if we wanted to do a supermajority of the electorate to adopt any amendments. So
correct.
You had... It would, I mean, so I wonder if there's any counties that have adopted either of those, a 4/5 vote and you'll do the research. I'm not going to put you on the spot here because obviously this is, but it was an interesting concept that was brought up today. And so I looked at the supermajority by the electorate to pass amendments when they're on the ballot, and then a 4/5 vote to basically of the Board of Supervisors to put amendments onto the ballots.
Yeah, and when the suggestion was made, I was looking through the different charters that I printed out. I didn't see it in any of those.
Okay.
San Mateo, Orange County, Sacramento County, Alameda, Santa Clara County. It's not in any of those.
Yeah, but they're interesting ideas, and I'd like if you could explore those possibilities. And then... I heard the Charter Review Commission. I guess are there counties that have a Charter Review Commission?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm not a big fan of those commissions. I'll just say it now that I also am not supportive of a redistricting committee. But I've already said that before publicly many times. And then the other one that came up
was the sheriff, and they reclassified the sheriff in some counties and turned him, and I didn't quite understand that. Are there other counties that have reclassified his job description?
I'm not aware of, I don't really understand the comment, to be honest with you, and I'm not aware of any charter that has done what I think the comment was suggesting. I will say that constitutionally, the sheriff must be an elected official. So, yeah.
But I don't want to do anything to change the sheriff's job description. So if we have to clarify that the role of sheriff shall be defined as a chief law enforcement officer for San Luis Obispo County, I'd be okay with that. If that's, you know, if people can, you know, change a job description.
Our recommendation would be that the charter doesn't touch that aspect, and therefore it doesn't change anything about the sheriff as it currently exists in state law. And to include a provision like that in a charter would suggest you're trying to amend something. And what that language suggests is you're trying to change not prove a negative, but you're trying to say we're not doing anything over here, and we don't want to change anything about the sheriff. But then the question would be, well, why'd you include it in there to begin with? So I think our recommendation would be just omit it entirely, and that way you're not touching anything about the sheriff's duties.
Okay. I'm wondering if there's other counties, if you could do the research on that too.
Sure.
If there's other counties that have, you know, changed the definition of the sheriff, because I did hear an example that I thought was very credible. I just don't have the experience. So those are my questions.
Through the chair, may I?
Yeah,
I have
sure.
some papers
Carry
right
on.
Here in front of me that came through some of the constituents when they were interested in this agenda item, that the charter of San Francisco County. So when you're looking, it looks like it's in the San Francisco County charter that the chief of police shall have the powers which are now may be conferred upon a sheriff by state law, and that the sheriff shall be the.
And that one is unique. I think it's a city and county
together.
Yeah, so I think what they were doing is combining those functions.
Yeah, Rita Neal, let me just address that as well. The Constitution of California, as well as the government code that addresses charters, there's a distinction between cities, what cities can do in their charters, and what counties. And city and county combined are under the city. There's only one county in California that is a city and county, and that's San Francisco. So cities have police chiefs generally under the Constitution. With regards to county charters, it does say that the district attorney, the sheriff, and the assessor must be elected officials. So if that provides clarification to that distinction between cities and counties and city and counties.
Once again, the city of and county of San Francisco is messing with us.
They're special.
Ms. Arnold, did you have further?
No, I just want to bring that up while it was being discussed. Thank you for that.
Are there any further questions? Ms. Ortiz-Ligg.
Yes, so my question is, how do you get out of, if we go being a charter county, does one have a chance to get out of being a charter county then? Yep.
Be an amendment to dissolve it.
Mm-hmm. So on the
of the people, yeah.
So if there was as the appointed person sitting here on the dais and looking at another appointed person, I think about the fact that I get the point about the supervisor coming from the people and all of that for a short time. You know, it seems to be a little bit frivolous in some ways because it's such a short amount. Since every election's every 2 years, I mean, I kind of just got here and I'm already up for election now. So I've served for 17 months and coming into an election period. However, I know that, you know, a lot of this is coming because we have a Democratic governor, and so like to have the people decide who the supervisor is. I really appreciate the comments though of the League of Women Voters in regards to some of the countywide offices. And again, I think that not just the $1 million it's going to cost and the time to prepare and all of that, but to have a minority possibly vote in some of the most important offices within the county, I think is of a concern. So that's one thing that I just, I don't quite understand how we would want to risk that for less than, I mean, really, the person, the office would have to be vacant right after they were elected, and then you would have possibly, well, so 6 months, 8 months, so maybe an entire year of, by the time the election happened, that that person would be in office. And it just seems like a pretty big step to be going forward in that manner. But on the four-fifths part, the suggestions in regards to should we go forth with a charter movement, I think the four-fifths part is an important part. And if that was the case, then perhaps now we should do a four-fifths in regards to an approval of a charter to begin with.
Well, you're phrasing that as a question. Mr. Ansola-Behar, does this board have any ability to require a four-fifths vote of this board or a supermajority vote of the public to adopt a charter?
No.
Okay. So I guess a couple of foundational questions here, because staff is asking for direction. Staff themselves brought up a question as regards the length of vacancy before a special election is required, and they were seeking direction on that. The League of Women Voters brought up the issue that while the date of the election, the time period for calling the election is set, the setting of it is not specified. Before we get to those two things, let me ask, informally, if you could even do it as a straw vote. I assume from comments or lack of comments that I hear here that a majority of this board is intent on moving this discussion forward. Is there any interest in terminating the consideration of a charter county this evening? So it doesn't appear. So I guess then the first question that I would ask the board here is, in terms of directing staff, can we indicate to staff that as a board we are committed to calling June 21st the last date by which we would formulate and act on whatever might be or might not be put before the voters?
Well, I have a question on that. I mean, that is the last date. I actually asked the clerk recorder. I think that's the clerk recorder's date. So you've stated the 21st. You need to be able to be prepared for the November election. So June 21st would be the last kind of drop dead day.
That is preferred, yes.
Without, you know, putting your entire staff into a complete frenzy and creating,
I think it would,
cardiovascular disease.
Right. I think it would put more stress on who's ever doing the primary arguments and the impartial analysis, because I would have to shrink that
so, understand.
Time frame down.
Thank you.
Again, I just hope this board could let us establish the official drop dead date of action by this board on June 21st. Is that acceptable?
That's acceptable
to
me.
Seeing no objection to that, we'll call it that. So then I would ask those who are the proponents of this charter idea in the first place, do you have direction to staff on the question of the time frame during ahead of an election or ahead of end of term that a special election is required as opposed to other action or lack thereof?
I'll speak up on that, and I appreciated your alternative time frame, which was the 365 days. And then you mentioned that the charter itself is written up to be 30 days, call for the election 30 days after, which I would approve that as well.
And the only question I'd have again for the clerk recorder is you're okay with the 365 and the 30 days?
Yes, I would be.
Okay.
And the direction that we'd also need is, if it's less than 365, does the board want to appoint or leave it vacant? What would be the direction there?
I think I would say leave it vacant, I think, and till we get to the election, that would be my
choice. Well, that's what we did last time. I think we did appoint an interim, right? Is that what, if I remember correctly? But it was
the process took a long time because we went out and found a headhunter, then we went out and found applications. Then we had a whole spiel going on. So we went in-house and had
folks. And I also want to make sure that we're also separating out our discussion regarding board vacancies versus other elected office vacancies. So I think right now I'd like to be able to start with maybe board vacancies, and that way I can be absolutely clear in how we're actually drafting this.
Could I ask a question?
I'd be okay with a vacancy.
Question from Ms. Compton.
So my question would be, if you didn't backfill that and you went a year, any decisions that required 4/5 vote, budgeting, anything out of the budget cycle, et cetera, you wouldn't be able to make those decisions.
But we've done that before. I was thinking in my 9 years and 3 months that I've been elected here, we've had three vacancies and two of them have been supervisors, and we've had months go by before we had those filled. But I mean, it was the governor's choice, but that took months as well. And
I wonder if I could speak to the 4/5 vote, Ms. Compton. If there are only four supervisors, it requires a unanimous vote, but that is a 4/5 vote. Similarly, it would require a unanimous vote of three supervisors. We can't do less than three to fulfill the 4/5 requirement. So what is, again, I think there are multiple problems with the matter of leaving a vacancy in an important leadership role in the county for a year. I think that does not do service to this, the citizenry of this county, and I don't think that it does service to the organization here that may require leadership. And I think the exercise we went through on the clerk recorder is illustrative of the problems that we were in a very crucial time, and it took us quite a while, and vacancies are a problem. So I don't see that we leave a position vacant. And again, staff is asking for direction on two different items there. One is the matter of the countywide elected offices, the sheriff, the DA, et cetera, assessor, auditor, controller, and as opposed to the vacancy on the Board of Supervisors. And I have, again, the direction given previously that came before us today was that these seats would remain vacant. And is that still the direction of the majority of
Chair
this
Gibson,
board?
If I could just mention, the previous direction was to leave it vacant at the board, vacant board seats, but the other elected offices either it remains vacant or you appoint. That was the That was the direction previously.
Is that the direction on that?
No, I'm saying leave it vacant on the supervisors, and we know that it's taken many months in the past when we've had vacancies for the governor to go through the process to get someone appointed. But we had the vacancy at the clerk's office. It wasn't exactly vacant because it was the deputy clerk that managed the clerk's office for the months that it took us to, and we were in the appointment process at that point, but it took this board months to get someone to get our headhunter hired, get those applications or get the advertise that we had the opening, receive the applications, decide how we were gonna work it. I mean, that was a months long process. So it doesn't happen very often that we have vacancies. It just seems funny that we've had three in 9 years, but I'm just saying that one way or another, it's a process. And even if we did an appointment before an election, if the point of doing all this is to give the public an opportunity to vote, then that's what we're chasing here. And to do an appointment before for a countywide office before we go to an election, I think we're gonna just run up against the same timeline. And in the countywide offices, I think we've discussed this before, that the number two in command or the number three in command or whoever will step up and take the position has been the natural way to do things. And we watch that play out at the clerk's office as well.
And I think in Orange County, they had a vacancy for supervisor, and they did not fill it. They went straight to the election. And so I would argue that, and I think Supervisor Arnold is exactly right. The main thing here is to keep the main thing. And so if we're going to keep it vacant, and then we move towards the election because we want this position filled by an election of the people.
So what is your direction to staff on that for the consideration at the May 17th?
that we keep it vacant.
For how long, and the timeline, again, staff raised the question of whether it be 180 days or 365 days. Is there any direction to change the 180 days?
Well, I think from
the
our
alternative, the
365, that that's now. What we just asked the clerk recorder, and she believes that that's the best fit. So, yes.
Is there a majority of this board that accepts that? Well, it's not so much what the clerk recorder said, Ms. Compton. It's a question of what supervisors.
It is for me, what the clerk
which means
said.
That you agree
which means
with,
I'm
the,
okay with
the 365.
My
okay.
question was
and the
30 all right.
Days.
All I'm trying to do is get clarity here so that we can do it. Again, I'm opposed to that because again, I think the expectation of leaving a position vacant for that long is not in the interest of our residents and not in the interest of our. And not in the interest of our organization. So the other point on the election vacancy question had to do with the matter of calling the election versus setting the date of the election. Does staff have any suggestions or commentary on the question of whether this charter language would usefully include the setting of the date as opposed to the calling.
Yeah, this is Sean with the County Council's office again. I'd actually look to our clerk recorder on that. I would say the date of the election itself or special election is probably dependent on the circumstances, and maybe it might be best to leave it vacant, to you know, not speak to that, because when the election will occur is probably they'll know better, you know, when they actually call the election. So I'd look to Ms. Cano on some of that.
Ms. Cano, any thoughts on whether, you know, if it looks like a proposal is going before the voters here, I can see, read the tea leaves here, that we're going to get to the 17th and the 21st of June and so forth. Do you have an opinion that you'd like to offer the board on setting the date of the election, or is it should it be left unspecified?
I would prefer to just leave it unspecified, and okay. until the a vacancy would occur, we can develop it then. The Elections Code does have established election dates, but it also has a section in there as well that section in the Elections Code does not pertain to charter counties. So again, it would we would have that flexibility to either decide to have an election on an established election date or establish one of our own.
Okay, that we were asking for your expert opinion. We appreciate you delivering that. Is there any other direction to be met?
I just want to be sure that we're all in agreement that it would we can call the election within 30 days, and that just we're not putting any hard dates, but we're calling for it the earlier the better, and that gives you the chance to get started.
Right. That sets the time.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
So it's 30 days.
Council?
I just want to make sure we've got clear direction, so if I can just go through this list, unless there's any further direction that the board wants to give.
I have further direction.
And I do too.
All right.
But you can go first.
No, I just want to, I'll wait till everybody gives direction, and then we'll go from there to clarify it.
Okay.
All right. So go ahead, Ms. Arnold.
My other two pieces of direction, I think we've addressed the staff recommendations. We've gone to the 365 and the 30, and I just want to be, I want to have more firm and absolute on, I was really interested in some of these safeguards, and I understand why safeguards might be important. So I'm on the May 17th, you're telling us that we have an opportunity. We can get some more solid information and then make different choices on the 17th or stick with the
That's correct. We'll do an analysis of that.
So we ask and we're told that it doesn't look like any other counties require 4/5 vote to make amendments. Right now we're headed into creating a charter, but then to in the future to make amendments if it's different and it is legal to require that 4/5 vote. And I'm only asking this because it's expensive to put things on a to have an election, to hold an election. And I think the whole intent of this evening was to, there were some of us anyway that wanted to see that the electorate was involved when we have these vacancies, that we can go out there and have people choose for themselves how they fill vacancies for elected positions in this county. A whole bunch of other policy, and we talked about that at the very beginning of this session. If we're going to start having a whole bunch of things added to our charter that are really just policy decisions, for example, we could have made the decision in this redistricting year to go to a commission. It was a policy decision. We made our vote, how we, this board, were going to tackle the redistricting that was in our bailiwick here in this year of redistricting. That could be a policy decision every 10 years. A different board could choose a commission, and the next year, 10 years later, that board could choose to do a different, take a different path. So I just wouldn't want to see we create a charter and then we start to see expensive ballot measure amendments coming into our charter when they could be dealt with as policy decisions. So to me, the four-fifths vote to be required for amendments to this charter. And so there would be, to me, in my mind, maybe legally it would be separate, would make sure that it was a popular thing, and it would stop it from happening over and over just every time somebody had a win.
And Supervisor Arnold, if I can address that, Rita Neal, and as Mr. Ansola Behar said, we will do further analysis before May 17th, but I do just want to indicate that the government code section talks about two ways to amend a charter, which is, well, actually three ways. It could be submitted to the board, suggested to the board, and then by majority of vote, you put it on the ballot, or it's by petition signed by 10% of the qualified electors from the last gubernatorial election. So even if you had, and I'm not sure you can, but even if you had a four-fifths vote requirement to amend the charter, the electors within the county could bring a petition forward to put it on the ballot. We'll do further analysis on that, but I don't want expectations exceeded here.
They could, the electorate could do that. They could bring a petition to change things on the charter so it could come from there. Could that be a requirement so that we know that any amendments to the charter then would be something that's brought by the people and not, some.
Yeah, again, we'll do further analysis, but the government code does talk about that an amendment can be put before the voters by a majority vote of the board. So again, I know Mr. Ansola Behar will do that research to see if there's any case law which interprets the language within the government code, and we'll come back on the 17th for you on that.
Okay, and then anyway, some of these other, what was brought to us as safeguards, I'm interested in those, so I can hand you the list of things I'm interested in, but that's just direction, that those would be questions that matter to me before I wanted to move forward beyond the May 17th.
Is that the extent of your direction?
Yes.
So I'll, Ms. Compton, you have?
So I was interested too in the safeguards, and I think we've mentioned most of them, but the four-fifths vote, I liked what Sarah Sims said, and she's done quite a bit of research on this. And then the supermajority elected to pass, no charter committee, the sheriff's duties, we've already discussed those too. So I just want to make sure that when John researches it, he comes back with some certainty there.
All right, thank you. I'll offer my comments here. I find it fascinating and in no small measure hypocritical for supervisors on this dais to be moving forward to put a charter before the voters of this county on a simple majority vote of the board and a simple majority vote of the electorate, and then speculating as to how they might be able to lock that charter down or at least make it more difficult for future boards to offer this to the voters and make it more difficult for voters themselves to modify the charter. And all this is being couched in terms of putting these important concepts before the people, and yet what we're hearing here is an effort to limit the ability of the people through supermajority votes in one venue or another to do that. And that kind of intent seems to permeate into the election to vacancies issue here. It is indeed a noble democratic idea that a vacant position would be put out for a vote of the people, whether it's expensive or whether it's logistically difficult. It has that attraction until you consider that for the matter of a vacancy on the Board of Supervisors, that election might be held in a district that has been gerrymandered, very much as the districts that we are now operating under have been gerrymandered. That the final determination on that awaits the action of the court, as is appropriate for the separation of powers here. But as I'm fully committed to the idea that the electorate chooses its elected officials rather than elected officials choosing its electorate. And so by any means that we would be considering a charter, I think it's that speaks to special elections as a primary mechanism as opposed to gubernatorial appointments. I think it's fundamentally important that we guarantee that we have fairly drawn supervisorial districts. To that end, I fully and wholeheartedly support the establishment of an independent redistricting commission for this county, not a committee. The Board of Supervisors did not have the ability to establish, so far as I could tell, an independent commission as we took up the redistricting of 2021 into 2022. We did have the opportunity to seek the counsel of residents through an advisory committee, as many counties have, and a majority of this board rejected that idea. But what we have seen in the aftermath of the decision on redistricting is a very strong sentiment within the county of San Luis Obispo that these districts were improperly drawn, and it was improper for the Board of Supervisors by majority vote to draw them for themselves. And so this is a reaction and an argument that has been indicated, has been engaged in a lot of different places, not least of which the full state of California, which has an independent redistricting commission. Four of our counties have independent redistricting commissions. I'm not sure whether Monterey has or not, but I know San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, and Santa Barbara have such commissions. And in my search of the coverage of the actions of those commissions, I found no major objection to that, save for one incumbent supervisor in Los Angeles County. And I guess if one makes an incumbent supervisor a little bit uncomfortable by the redrawing of a district, that may not be completely a bad thing. None of this is easy, but I think our duty here is to do something that's fair. And so I would like to move that we direct staff to include in the charter proposal that be brought forth before the voters an independent redistricting commission modeled on that exists in our neighbor county, Santa Barbara County. Do I have a second?
Yes, I'll second that.
And is there any discussion?
Yes.
If we're going to have a vote on this being direction, then they'll be the first one. I just thought otherwise we were giving casual direction. Could you bring us back information on this point or that point? But you want to vote on this?
Because
I'm ready.
Because I understand from comments that I've heard that there's a variety of opinions here, and this one I think is important. I think everyone should be definitively on the record as to whether they support independent redistricting in this county. That's the motivation of this motion, to be clear about it. I will entertain discussion. I saw Supervisor Ortiz leg.
You have a motion, and then
and I have a second.
Don seconded it. Okay, I'll speak to that. We've already discussed this when we were doing the redistricting. I believe that we were elected in our districts by our constituents, and throughout the history of this county, it's been the job of the Board of Supervisors to tackle the redistricting situation. We had more guidelines than ever before through legislation from the state of California with the Fair Maps Act, and we followed it to the best of our ability. But I think that it's when you talk about fair, at least people know how to contact their elected officials, give comments. It's the same process we do with a lot of things. And I am totally against passing that job off to people that are further away from the people that haven't been elected by a constituency. I think we are perfectly capable, or whoever's sitting on this dais any given 10 years when the redistricting comes around, if they've been elected by their constituents, then I'm saying that they have the confidence of the people they represent to do this job, and that's where it should stay.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
I would say that the commission is really critical, and now that we have analysis at a nationwide level, the Brenner Center for Justice has determined that the commissions are really truly the only way we can avoid gerrymandering, and that happens from both sides, you know, both sides. So it's the one thing that we really need to offer up to our citizenry, is to be able to avoid any of us influencing through our own power to make sure that it's actually the people who gets to determine how we carve up our county or whatever. And I think that the data is in that those states that have embraced commissions have avoided the gerrymandering. So I am very supportive of it.
Mr. Pishon.
Yeah. Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Ortiz-Legg, we did follow the Fair Maps Act as written by the state legislature. The map is a legal map that we did adopt. Many counties, and actually a majority of counties in California, voted on maps using the Fair Maps Act. So I will not be supportive of this issue today.
Fine. Any further discussion, Ms. Compton?
Well, I made my discussions when this whole redistricting thing came up too, but I think Supervisor Gibson, you keep saying a strong sentiment and that this was gerrymandered. You've had two decisions so far by the court that have not agreed with that. So we'll see where it goes. But I made my comments before. I think there's something very wrong with electing other people then to do the job that we were elected to do. And you just go and look at the controversy with the clerk recorder, and it was, you know, well, we gave them direction, well, they didn't follow the direction, well, they thought they could do their own direction, etc. So why would we want to go through that again? Why would we take something that we have a decision to make and just give it up to somebody else? And I would ask all the people out here that are so upset about redistricting, Do you think it's fair that the assembly district that was created by the independent redistricting that affects us, that breaks our county in half? I don't think that's fair at all. And I never heard anybody who was so opposed to our redistricting mention that, not one peep about that. That was a huge assault to our county in doing that and dividing our county up. You've got North County voting for one assembly person and South County voted for another, and you don't think that was gerrymandering? That was done by an independent commission. So no, I won't support that.
And I will get to a vote on this so that we can move forward. I guess gerrymandering is in the eye of the beholder, but it's also within the jurisdiction of the court, which has indicated a likelihood that there's problems with the map. So we'll find that out. That's outside the jurisdiction of this board at this point. I think there is indeed a profound question of fairness. It's gone on. It's been discussed for years as to who should be drawing this, and we're seeing the trend toward independence. So with that, just to clarify this direction, Madam Clerk, if you could call the roll, please.
Chairperson Gibson?
Yes.
Supervisor Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Supervisor Pishon?
No.
Supervisor Compton?
No.
And Supervisor Arnold?
No.
All right. Let me ask then, are there any other matters on this and understanding exactly the path forward here? Our next scheduled hearing on this matter is May 17th. The action on that day is either to provide further direction or to take on action on this. Again, the action of this board is to craft something that would go before the voters for them to decide. I think that's key for us to remember. There's a certain amount of research that needs to be done by staff before then, and I believe that if staff is comfortable and understanding of the direction it's received.
Madam Supervisor Gibson, Reed, and Neal, I just want to reiterate so we are clear on direction when we come back in May. Initially, I hear that we have direction that the board is committed to
the last date of which the charter must be prepared for the voters to move forward to the register of voters is June 21st. I also heard that if there are 365 days or more left of the term, that it would go to an election and it would take, the board would call an election within 30 days. If there is less than 365 days in either a supervisorial election or a overall elected position, it would be left vacant. Additionally, with regard to calling an election versus setting a date, that will be left silent. The board will call an election, and depending upon the timing and in conjunction with the register of voters, a date for an election, general or special, can be decided at that time. Additionally, we heard that you'd like direction with regard to some of the safeguards that can be placed or not placed within a proposed charter, and our office will be doing that analysis, which will include whether you can add a four-fifths vote requirement to amend the charter, whether you can require a supermajority of the voters, whether you can change or amend the duties or title of the sheriff.
And I also heard that for other elected offices, that the DA, the sheriff, clerk recorder, for example, that likewise, vacancies would only be filled if the term of office is 365 days or more, and if less, that it's either vacant or appointed by the board.
Correct, and that's what I want a clarification on. We just went through this exercise, and I do believe we voted, but we voted just to have the second in command in the office or whomever stepped up in the office. So it would be confusing to report out maybe that we're just leaving it vacant and there's not going to be a sheriff or there won't be anyone, an auditor, or et cetera, et cetera. We were with those countywide offices. We would be allowed to do what we've done in the past and just have clarify who's in charge.
Yes, Supervisor Arnold, for clarification purposes, when there was a vacancy within the clerk recorder, our CAO appointed the deputy director okay. as the department head, and then okay. under the government code, the deputies within that office had the authority to act as necessary to carry on the business of the office.
And that system's already in place for the other, like the assessor or the sheriff, or all of the countywide offices.
That's correct.
So that they wouldn't be exactly vacant, but we would be waiting for the election to fill the elected vacancy. Okay. Just want to make sure. And could I ask one more quick question just to clarify? May 17th is pretty well set in stone then, right? We'll be back to address all this on May 17th.
That's the date that we have scheduled, and I'll look to...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. With no further comment, we'll declare this special meeting adjourned. Our next meeting is 2 weeks from today, regular. Have a good evening.